whole reason these kids got into trouble was because of us. We can't let them suffer because of our issues. The only way to end this is by working together. So, what do you say?
Your enemies think they're the hero, and you're the villain. There is no good.
Look at this freak.
There is no bad. Only weak or strong.
What are you, Tango and Cash?
No, Tango and Cash were narcotics detectives.
Oh, I'm sorry. You do realize neither one of you are cops, right?
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
All right. It's already the most important podcast of the year, even though the year just started. Cobra Kai season 3. Shea Serrano's here. They dropped this on basically January 1st at midnight. The success of this show on YouTube leading to it reappearing on Netflix, and then Netflix saying, screw it. Let's keep it going.
Yeah.
It's genius. It was the number one trending show. All the other streamers have to be kicking themselves. And they did a really good job in season 3. I'm going to start here. I really like this season. A minus from me. I haven't talked to you yet. I don't even know what your grade is. What was your grade?
I'm right there with you. They had a lot of setup in the first half of the season, and they pay it all off in the last like 3 episodes. By the end of the last episode, you're like, fuck yes, let's go.
So they bring back Elizabeth Shue, which we figured was going to happen. They hinted at it.
And best moment of the season. Best moment of the season.
And we'll get into how awesome she was, because she came in throwing 102 miles an hour, and was every scene was great. What I didn't expect was for them to dip into the Karate Kid too well.
I love it.
Daniel San's girlfriend from Karate Kid 2 and his arch nemesis from Karate Kid 2. I was like floored. First of all, the ex-girlfriend looked phenomenal. I don't know how old she is, but she looked fantastic. She hasn't aged 2 years in the last 20, 35, however long it's been. So it's great to see her. And I actually thought she did a good job with the acting too. And then the nemesis comes in. You're like, where is this going? And I actually thought they nailed it. I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah, it was really great. He was such a vicious bad guy. Like, okay, Johnny Lawrence is he's the number one bad guy in the Karate Kid universe. The bad boy of karate, Mike Barnes, he was like kind of cool in a way, but Chosen was like straight up trying to kill people.
Right.
He was like a murderer. Like a legitimate murderer. He was a swindler and a murderer. And they bring him back in, and he's just as intense. He's giving you that same face. You know he wants to fuck up Daniel real bad.
What do you think that guy was doing for the last 35 years? He was basically waiting for Cobra Kai to come back.
He was just waiting for this moment, and he was on it. He was great.
He looked pretty good. I beg to differ that he was more psychotic than Mike Barnes, because I think Mike Barnes might have been the biggest psycho in any movie that came out in the 80s. He at some point was ready to drop them to their death when they were trying to rescue the bonsai tree.
See, that's the difference. He didn't, though. If Chosen would have been there, he would have cut the rope. Wouldn't have been a conversation at all. He hang glided or whatever, paralined into like a tiny island to kill a woman in front of everybody and also kill Daniel.
Yeah, they really let the domestic violence moment in Karate Kid 2, they just kind of threw that one under the rug because the ex-girlfriend was saying how, no, we're really good friends now. We've worked it out. It's like, okay. I just remember him punching you in front of 200 people and then trying to kill your boyfriend. I'm glad you worked it out. I don't know what the process was for working that out, but they worked it out.
It was a wild moment. A wild moment.
They're like, he's changed. He started doing yoga, little Tai Chi. But I didn't know where that was going. And my first instinct, because this is usually my instinct with this stuff, is like, this is going to be bad. Mm-hmm. This is where the wheels come off right here. When they dip into the Karate Kid 2 and they try to make believe that this dude is now a decent guy. And by the end of it, I was like, great, well done. Pulled it off.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I liked him being in Okinawa. Yeah. Plus Daniel-san got to go back to Okinawa. I don't know if they actually filmed it in Okinawa. It might've been like, you know, Pacific Palisades for all we know, but it seemed like it. It seemed like they were there. So that was cool.
It definitely felt authentic. It felt real.
Did you buy that there was stuff Miyagi didn't teach him? There was stuff he held back. There was a pressure point karate, an evil version of Miyagi-Do karate that maybe he just didn't want Daniel-san to know about?
I 100% believed it by the end of the series. When he did it to Kreese, I was like, oh yeah, okay, I'm in. When Chosen was first explaining it, I was like, I don't know, they're pretty close. And then the more I thought about it, you know what? There's probably a bunch of stuff that he didn't tell Daniel. Because Daniel was, 17, 18 years old at the time? Like, he was still a child, you know? That's stuff you don't bring out till you're in your 20s, baby.
I think pressure point karate would be a good one for you.
I'm all in. If you know somebody, get Chosen on the line. Teach
me. Because at some point, you and Brian Curtis are going to have to fight to see who the strongest person at the ringer is.
My only chance is if I can pressure point right under the bicep.
Just right there. Get right under the thigh, stuff like that. But yeah, they paid off that whole thing. And I really enjoyed the whole thing. It was also, we should mention, Daniel was the worst part of season 3, in my opinion.
Really?
Well, for me, he's become the character I'm the least interested in.
Oh, yeah. That's fair. Because he was the star of the other movies. And they're like, I don't need to see him as much. Give me more Miguel. Give me as much Miguel as you can feed me.
More Miguel, more Johnny Lawrence, more Tori.
More Tori. More, great turn with Tori.
All of it. I was in on every other character. And then it was like, oh, they got to work in Daniel because Macho's the star of the show. But it's like, all right, here's his plot for this year. He might lose his auto dealership. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do this 4-episode arc that's going to lead with, oh, guess what? The girl that he saved in the hurricane, tsunami, whatever that thing was, she's now a vice president of sales at the car place that revoked their cars from LaRusso.
Connect those dots. Connect those dots. I love
you
it.
Like that.
I love it.
I like that he recognized her. He saw her once in a dark rainstorm when she was like 11, and he was like, Kochiman?
It's a great memory for Daniel LaRusso.
What would you do to fix Daniel-san for season 4?
I think you just let him be. You know what you do with him? What they did with McNulty in The Wire, where you just bring him in for a few seasons. Like, he was the engine for the first season. And then later on, they were like, you know what? We're going to pull away from him and just bring him in when we need a couple of points to be made. I think you would do that here because everybody else is so interesting in there. Like,
right.
I thought it was really fun the way that they teased out the whole, like, here's the origin story for the name Cobra Kai with the war fighting and all. That stuff is just so much fun to get into. It's just really, really neat. So let Daniel LaRusso be in the background a little bit. Bring him in 40% less, and let's lean into the rest of them.
So you would go season 4 Wire with McNulty, where he's just on a boat somewhere.
That was season 2 when he's on the boat.
No, what was his job in season 4 when he basically was out to lunch?
He had gone back to being just a walk around cop.
Yeah.
And then after Bodhi died, he was like, I need to go back in.
Yeah, I need to step up. I think I'm down with that. Cause my fear, because this is now gonna go on 8 seasons. This show's now a phenomenon.
I'm praying.
Usually when they're trying to revive a character, it's either marital problems or the unexpected baby.
Yeah. I don't want either one of those.
The Unexpected Baby would be, yeah. Please don't do The Unexpected Baby. That would be a disaster. Marital Problems, you could talk me into if Elizabeth Shue is part of the cast. So this is a good time to talk about her. She comes in. One of my concerns is she's won an Oscar. She's had a really good career. Would she feel like she was slumming it, doing somebody a favor, maybe in and out? And no.
No.
She came in.
She went for it.
She went for
it. Went for it.
She couldn't have been more likable. She looked great. She had real chemistry with both guys. It made sense. They had great scenes. She clicked with the wife. The wife got along. That could have gone. No, they were friends. I like that she was divorced because it opened that she's not Allie Mills Schwarber anymore. She's just Allie Mills. Yeah. Opens the door now for somebody. Plus, Johnny Lawrence had just gotten it on with Miguel's mom. He's like, oh, maybe this is my lady. Now Allie's back. Mm-hmm. I don't know if she comes back for season four. My assumption would be, what else is she doing? This is the biggest TV show that anyone has right now. I got like tens of millions of people watch this show. What career move would be better for her than just joining the cast in season four? I can't think of any.
Yeah, that's got to be the move. The thing about her coming back, and the thing about them opening up the karate verse, as it were, is that in that first season, I think they established pretty quickly that everybody involved genuinely loved what they were doing. Like you never got a hint that William Zabka was only doing this role because he couldn't get other stuff. It seemed like he did it because he wanted to do it, and they were all like leaning into it. So as they started bringing in the other people, you felt that energy too. When the mom walks into the house, you're like, whose house is this? We haven't seen this yet. And then Allie's on the couch, and she gets that big old Allie smile with those big old Allie teeth. Laramie and I are on the couch watching the show, and I was like cheering, like, oh, my girl Allie is back. Let's go. Because they teased it out in like the first two seasons or so that maybe she's going to pop in, and then she finally did, and you're like, all right, everybody is committed to this. We're going to see, at some point, we're going to see everybody. Hillary Swank will eventually show up in this show. She will be available in this show.
Yeah, they dropped, so I think it was episode 9, without any warning, all of a sudden Elizabeth Shue is there. Because, you know, like you, I binge watched this. I was in Arizona in a hotel room for a soccer tournament, and I was like, great, I'm going to watch all of the Cobra Kai's. And, you know, you kind of zone out a little bit as you're watching. And then episode 9 starts. It's like, wait, oh, okay, let's go.
And then they do the trip to the arcade and everything with the music again. Oh, man, it was great.
I think this show is really, really well done and really smart with a lot of the choices it makes. And one of the things I like is she comes in and she does it over and over again. It was like, oh, that was a million years ago. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, we were just kids back then. Or, oh, that was dumb. And it's so important that she does that because for Johnny Lawrence from the first episode, it's like, this guy's still back there in 1984. This was the highlight of his life because that's a real thing that happens. In general, sometimes people peak when they're 17. Sometimes the best moment of their life was when they were the starting quarterback of their high school. And then it's like the next highlight becomes their 10-year reunion or their 20-year reunion. And it's like their life just didn't work out as well as it did when they were 17. So he's got that. And then she comes in and she's like, oh, yeah, we were so young and dumb back then. And it's I think it was important. I also did not feel like she had any chemistry at all with Macchio, which as you reset the Karate Kid universe in your head, you think like, well, maybe she shouldn't have ever been with Daniel-san. Maybe it was always Johnny Lawrence. Maybe this was the connection. So as we head to season four, I'm guessing if she comes back, love triangle, right? With Miguel's mom and her.
Yeah, that's got to be the move. I was really excited about how they laid those pieces there too. When she showed up, I was like, oh, I hope they don't do like, I hope Daniel doesn't start flirting with her. It was never that.
Nobody wants to see Daniel flirt with anyone ever.
No. But her and Johnny and Miguel's mom, like that's an interesting pairing. That's an interesting group for some storylines because at some point Miguel and Johnny are going to be like the new Johnny and Kreese. Like he's going to have to not like him for some reason. We got to get to there. And then I think that's a good pivot point.
Well, she looked great. She did a great job. You know, they mentioned in the last episode, the episode 10, the kids were all talking and one of the kids made a WrestleMania 3 reference about how, no, this happened in WrestleMania 3 with the, I forget what the tag team was. And it does make me think the people that created this show and write it, I think, are big wrestling fans and they understand the concept of heel turns.
Yeah.
Because we've seen that over and over again, right? Like Miguel was a good guy. Then he had the heel turn. And then he breaks his back. Now he's a good guy again. And then Johnny Lawrence's son, kind of the reverse, right? Good guy, nice guy. Heel turn. Now he's gone to the dark side. And then Hawk is the other one.
That's my guy right there.
Hawk's heel turn comes out of nowhere. And as we have the big, awesome 10-minute fight scene at the end, which is somehow in the LaRusso's house. God knows how much damage is in LaRusso. And Hawk is the leader. We've already seen Hawk break a dude's arm. His old buddy's arm. Just broke it. Just broke his arm. And it's like, this guy's gone. He's fucking lost his mind. He's gone Mike Barnes on us. And then in the middle of the fight, he's like, no, these are my friends. And just flip sides, heel turn.
Yeah. I love that they brought it. They brought Kyler back, who was like the guy that was picking on them in the first season.
Yeah.
And then they bring him in and he's like he's going to team up with Tori and they're going to be the new top fighters for Cobra Kai. So you have to do something with Hawk. And to team him back up with Miguel, because they're friends the whole time. He's like, he visits him in the hospital. Like he cares about him. Clearly, he just didn't know like where he belonged. I love that they bring him back into the fold.
And what's the name of the guy whose arm he broke?
Dimitri.
That guy, great recovery from the broken. We had a couple great recoveries this year.
In like
that
2 weeks.
That guy's arm snapped. He's doing karate 3 weeks later. And then Miguel, who goes from, he's basically Tom Cruise and born on the 4th of July with the giant head thing on. And it's like, he might never walk again. Mm-hmm. And then Johnny Lawrence does this revolutionary spinal care program on him where he's basically just antagonizes him into walking again.
Yeah.
And within 2 weeks, he's doing karate.
Who knew? Who knew you could cure paralysis by just calling someone a pussy enough times? He's just like, I'm going to walk.
Setting sneakers on fire.
Yeah. What's going on here? I love Miguel, but still my favorite character in the whole show. I can't get enough of him. There's that great moment when him and Kyler are fighting in the house. I believe his name is Kyler. And he's got him pinned up against the wall and he's punching him in the back.
Yeah, that hurt. And that looked like it hurt.
Oh my God. And he flips out and, oh man, it's great. It's great.
Well, I know, and we've talked about this before in the pod. You're very protective of the Latino actor corner, making sure everybody is treated respectfully and everyone's given the right kind of, I don't know, push. And at the end of season two, he's going over a staircase, and it's like really they had to cripple Miguel out of anybody on the show, but good strong bounce back for him.
I think we go like 7 episodes before he's up walking around and moving again. And if I could change anything, like I just want him to be the center of the show. After this season was over, after season 3 was over, I went back and watched the tournament episode of season 1, which is like my favorite Miguel scene, when he's just this bulldogging everybody and standing over him and screaming him. I love this kid. I love him so much.
I like that he was basically doing not a Johnny Lawrence impersonation, but definitely studied the Johnny Lawrence tapes for a couple sneers.
For sure.
A couple chest things, stuff like that. Well, so this would be something I'm throwing at you for season 4. We haven't met Miguel's dad yet.
I know who it is. I know who it is. I called it when season 1 came out. They've already begun aiming us in this direction. It's Terry Silver. It's the guy from Karate Kid 3. Okay. They don't give us any information about who the dad is, except for a part when they're all sitting around eating and Miguel's mom is explaining like, we don't talk about his dad. He was a bad guy. He was like, he did some bad things, whatever. They're from Ecuador. And there's a part in Karate Kid season 3 where Terry Silver is in a hot tub. He's on a cell phone. He's got a ponytail and an earring, like doing the bad guy shtick, talking about dumping some like nuclear waste or whatever in Borneo, in South America somewhere. I think that's what they're going to do. I think that's who John Kreese was talking to on the phone when he's like, it's been a long time. It's time for us to link back up. I think that's who they're bringing back. And I think eventually we're going to find out, that's the dad. I'm calling it now. I called it 2 years ago.
That was definitely who he was on the phone with.
Yeah.
I'm veering against you on this one.
Go for it.
I think the dad gives them a chance to hire our guy. S.A. Morales.
Oh, you think so? I would like that.
Morales
I would like
comes
that.
Back as the dad who he's made some mistakes. It's a little Johnny Lawrence thing. Maybe his life didn't work out the way it did, but now he's here to make amends. But I'm not sure I trust him. Why'd you leave the first time? Then we have the potential love rectangle with you have Allie back. Allie, Johnny Lawrence is juggling Allie and Miguel's mom, but now Miguel's dad, S.I. Morales, he's back. And now it's like, what happens here? And guess what? S.I. Morales does not like William Zabka.
Oh, he hates them.
They don't hit it off immediately. He doesn't like the training. There's a lot of stuff he doesn't like.
Could be a cool way to introduce like a new fighting style. You know, everybody has their own individual fighting style. And he's like, Isai is like, no, this is a different thing I'm going to teach you. Here we go. I don't know.
Also, the other guy I was thinking, we'd have to age him up. Maybe put some white hairs on the sides, but Michael Pena, our guy.
Yeah. He could do it.
Maybe this is a way to sneak him in. I don't know. He's busy.
He can always do it. You know what? Little thing I was really excited about that they dropped into season three that I don't think they'd done it up to this point is in the original Karate Kid, Johnny Lawrence has a very distinctive fighting noise that he makes. It's like aggressive.
Hee-yah!
Yeah. But it's like rumbly. It sounds like a small chainsaw when he does it. I think it's the most intimidating fight noise that anybody in any movie has had. And we didn't get him doing it, I don't think, through seasons one or two, but he does it in the last episode of season three when he kicks the door open. And I remember he makes the noise and he kicks the door open and I immediately got afraid. It's just such a scary, scary thing. I was really pumped about that.
So we both agree that Terry Silva was on the phone.
Yeah.
I guess I'm surprised they're acknowledging Karate Kid 3 because it's one of the worst movies of the 80s. It's also one of the funniest movies of the 80s. No, come on. It's a terrible movie, but it's a terribly entertaining movie. I've seen it. My son, who hadn't watched it, and like 6 months ago, it was on and I was watching it. And he's like, what's this? And I was like, Karate Kid 3. He's like, there's a 3? I'm like, oh, yeah. And we watched the whole thing, and he was mad at me after. He was like, how did you not tell me about Karate Kid 3? And I'm like, because it's terrible, but I was waiting for the right time. Terry Silva, the evil billionaire who decides to basically take a break from his life to destroy a 19-year-old kid in Reseda and rebuild his friend's karate studio. But they build the backstory that actually explains it. And I thought they did a good job.
Yeah.
He's clearly the guy who he saves in Vietnam. That has to be the same guy, right?
That's the one. Because they talk briefly about it in Karate Kid 3, like, you know, they were together.
He says in Karate Kid 3, he says something like, this guy, you saved my ass a million times in Vietnam or whatever he said. So it's clearly him.
Yeah. It's so much fun to watch them lay out all this stuff. Like at this point, everybody who has watched the show sort of understands the pacing of it and the things that they're trying to do, and they keep exceeding the expectations each time. It's just so enjoyable to watch. You just turn it on and feel a bunch of emotions for a little bit. We didn't talk Vietnam yet. We haven't talked about Sam versus Tori, which I thought was just really great.
So let's do Vietnam quick, because my son said that was his favorite part of season 3.
Mm-hmm.
He loved the Vietnam stuff. He thought it really worked and didn't understand where it was going. And then when it pays off with the snake pit showdown with Kreese, Kreese just ices that dude.
Yeah.
He just loved it. He thought it was really good. And I wasn't expecting a Kreese backstory. I thought maybe that'd be like season 7, but they just went for it and it worked. I thought it was good.
Yeah. I can't think of like a thing that they've missed on yet. It's great.
Tori versus Sam.
Oof.
So I'm not sure either of them are that good at karate. And I think they have to be really careful.
Uh-huh.
Cause I wanted when they got into the dojo there, Sam runs away, Tori follows her, and I was like, oh, it's on now.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like not that sad. I thought it was the worst fight scene of all the fight scenes. I don't know if they're limited with what Sam can do. My wife is on the corner of she's just not athletic enough to do some of the stunt stuff we need to do in the karate thing. I don't know if that's true or not, but they kind of cut that one short, it felt like.
That's crazy because I'm on the opposite side there. I feel like that was, for me, the most enjoyable fight to watch.
Because you like nunchucks.
They held it away from you for so long. They kept putting Sam in these positions where she would panic and run away, panic and run away, panic and run away. And so by the time they're in the house and they finally confront each other and you're like, okay, please, Sam, stand up to her. And she runs again. You're just like, oh, God. She picks up the stick, though. And when she does that, she decides she's not going to run anymore. I'm like, oh, fuck her up, Sam. Now is the time to fuck her. I
wanted 30 more seconds of and just a couple more blows landed. Did we ever figure out why Tori hates her to the point that it's almost homicidal?
Yeah, I think there's just a lot of bad stuff in her life going on. And we'll probably
she's just taking it all out on Sam.
Yeah, I mean, of course, she's mad about the Miguel and Robbie and that whole thing. Like, it's all very confusing for her there. But it seems like there's some crazy stuff happening that we don't know about yet for her that has just turned her into this bad person.
Can I ask you what would happen if you came home and the Serrano sons had a 20-person fight in the first floor of your house?
Oh, God.
You're like, hey, Dad, so some friends came over and got out of hand and everything is now broken.
It would be a hard conversation. But the thing is, I would not be all the way surprised about it. They have their little eighth grade group of friends now that they've been moving together through all of middle school. And between their group, they have, like, as a group, gotten into, like, I think two fights already at the trampoline place of all places. Bounce around place. It's gonna happen. But man, that fight was crazy. It starts out with them throwing that one kid through a window.
Right.
He goes to like check on a cat, comes flying back in through the window, and then he's like, it's a great line. He's like, there's no cat. There's
right.
You know, it's like, oh shit, they're going for it here.
I think it's cool how they film it where, I don't know how they do it. It's so well choreographed where it's like one fight and the camera moves, but it's definitely not edited. And it moves around for like a good 30, 35 seconds of just action, you know? And it's modeled, it's The Warriors, which I made you watch, which was over 40 years ago at this point. But they had the two fight scenes, one specifically in the bathroom when they fought the roller skating gang.
Yeah.
And everything's in there. And there's basically 15 people fighting in a small space. And it just worked. But that scene's only like 40 seconds. In Cobra Kai season 2 and then season 3, these are like 5-minute fight scenes.
I love a long fight scene. And I love a long shot in the fight scene. Because those are the moments when you can see how much work has gone into this. Because that's like a 5-on-5 fight or something, 6-on-6.
Yeah.
So like everybody's got to be moving at all times. It's really hard to pin down. It's really hard to keep up the energy in a long shot like that. That's like a trick that a lot of fight movies do. Like with Liam Neeson, for example, it's like quick cuts. Because they're trying to make him look faster than he is or more fluid than he is. But in these ones, they're just leaning into it and showing you a bunch of it. And it's really cool to watch that happen.
So for season 4, obviously Daniel and Johnny, their dojos are going to combine.
Yes.
And that's not going to go great.
Not great.
That will have some tension, some conflict. You figure they bring back Elizabeth Shue for season 4 and there's a love triangle. Miguel's dad, I think, comes into play because they got to extend the Miguel arc. I don't know how many months are passing or what year in high school these kids are. They've kind of skipped over that. I don't know. Has 2 months passed? Guys break their arm. They're fighting next week. I don't know how old these kids are supposed to be at this point. I do want to shout out the worst scene of season 3, though, was the soccer scene. One of my passions.
Yeah.
One of my passions is when there's bad soccer scenes in TV shows or movies because I think directors always feel like, oh, it's soccer. We'll just have the kids kick around, but they don't understand how bad it looks, especially if it's like supposed to be high school. This was one of the worst 1-minute soccer scenes ever filmed. It looked like Sam had never touched a soccer ball in her life, and she was like pawing at it with her foot like a cat with a toy. It was really bad. I encourage people to look out on a rewatch for that. Terry Silva's going to come back.
I feel like yes. He's got to be back, yeah.
And then maybe the Ralph Macchio separation with the wife type thing?
Or God, I hope not.
Sort of tension.
I don't think that's going to be
or
the case.
Or her old high school sweetheart is in town.
Maybe that would be fun to see him like have to be a little bit uncomfortable in a situation like that. But yeah, I think the main things, I think I'm really excited about the tournament being back. Anytime there's a tournament, I love it. I love it in the very end when Hawk walks in and he like stands up on the platform or whatever, and they're showing you all of the people who are going to be like the key figures in the tournament. And so now you're like, does Miguel defend his title? Does Hawk come through? Is it going to be Sam? Are they going to let one of the bad ones win again? Like, there's just a lot of really fun stuff that I hope that that's like a 2-episode thing, the tournament.
That'd be great. I love that Kreese went from, he was literally going to murder Johnny Lawrence. He's going to kill him. And then Macchio comes in. And then Macho's going to kill Kreese. But then other people come in and then they're like, hey, instead of murder, let's settle this at the tournament. It was like, cool.
The old-fashioned way, cool. Baby. The old-fashioned way. Let's go.
Well, listen, this show's going to keep going and going. Before we go, saw a movie on Netflix.
What was it?
I want to tell you about.
Please do.
It's kind of buried on Netflix. Netflix has a lot of new stuff. It stars Ryan Phillippe.
Uh-huh. I'm already
who
in.
Who is kind of, I think he's studied the Mark Wahlberg action movie territory, where Mark Wahlberg is now too big to just be in like shooter and movies like that. He's kind of transcended that. So there's kind of a territory open. Mark Wahlberg would have been in this movie 10 years ago. Now it's Ryan Phillippe. He's a Secret Service agent.
You're saying a lot of things I like right now.
He used to be the best. Guess what?
What?
Not really in that life anymore. Yeah, he just wants to unwind. Goes to pick up his son at college. One of his son's close friends is the daughter of a Supreme Court justice. Some stuff happening there. There's some bad guys who might want to kidnap the Supreme Court justice, and they might be doing it at the exact same time that Ryan Phillippe, who doesn't want this life anymore, is picking up his son from college. So it's like a cross between Shooter and Toy Soldiers, basically.
What is this movie called?
It is called The Second, and I'm going to give you the bad guy. It's your old friend Casper Van Diem.
Yes. That's a cast right there. That's a cast right there.
Yeah.
That's a cast.
So there you go. The
and
second.
A plot.
I've just given you a great 90 minutes. It's not a great movie, but I was just delighted that I just want them to keep making terrible movies like that where somebody used to be the best and now he's got to fight his way up. But it's a solid one. I watched the Liam Neeson one. I rented that one. And the one where he's another one who you want, he's a thief, but he wants out of his life. It's on Apple and all the streaming ones. It's an on-demand. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that great. I think it might be over for Liam Neeson as an action guy. He had a great run, though. I mean, it goes back to 12 years, right? But at some point, it's got to end.
Yeah, let him go on. Ryan Phillippe was great in the Shooter series. So yeah. I'm excited to watch this. I thought I was laughing to myself when at the very beginning of this podcast, you mentioned the Karate Kid came out at midnight on January 1 or whatever it was. And then like 3 hours later, you text me, hey, are you on episode 4 yet? Because like a crazy thing. I'm like, it fucking came out three and a half hours ago. How are you?
I thought you were a fan. No, I liked your response though. You said you were saving it for Saturday, but you're getting your family out of the house.
I had to send the kids to my mom's house. We're all quarantining. Go stay with your grandma. I'm going to watch the whole show. I watch it all in one day, order some food, a great, great time. Give me 7 more seasons of this and then another Karate Kid movie. Fuck it. Let's go for it.
I'll tell you this. I had Zapka on my podcast a couple weeks ago. I do think he's really good in the Cobra Kai show. And I do wonder, could he have grabbed this action turf? Could he have been like an action guy basically in the 90s? Could he have gotten a rejected Van Damme script and been like an alcoholic cop who's putting his life back together, but now he's got to foil some, terrorist act?
I think of the show Cobra Kai, I think William Zabka has had the biggest, I don't even know what you would call it. Not a turnaround, revelation. I don't know. But you watch the show and you realize, oh, this guy can, he can do it all. He's funny. He can be intimidating. He can be sweet. He's a good actor. He's like a genuinely good actor who can do a bunch more stuff than you know. He looked a certain way in the 80s, so they had him be a certain guy, but he could do everything. Like, I loved him. I love him in this show.
I tried to figure out a way to say that to him without it sounding insulting, and I couldn't figure it out when I interviewed him. I really wanted to ask him, like, you're a way better actor than I think I thought you were, but that's like a hard thing to say to somebody.
Oh, yeah.
But at
yeah,
the
yeah.
same time, like, I do feel like he was a really good actor. And I think he got pigeonholed by those three movies. And maybe, I don't know, maybe he didn't want it and maybe he left.
Or yeah, who knows what anybody was thinking at a thing. But I know watching this show, it happens in the very first season when he's in the convenience store and he has an altercation with the cashier and Miguel and the three of them together. And when that scene happened, I said, oh shit, oh, this is going to be good. And it's going to be good because of this guy right here. And then sure enough, you know, I think he's the star of the show.
No question. He's dusted Macchio. But it's great for Macchio, too.
Yeah.
He's definitely, they've done it correctly. All right. Shea Serrano, good to see you as always. And I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.